This week on RSVNB Update, new Abyssal Monstrosities bring us much-needed melee upgrades, a fantastic return to traditional Slayer creatures, and an environmental masterpiece. The next Yak track is also here, and there's skill and kill for everyone. But is it too much? This is RSVNB Update, episode 871, recorded Thursday, March 3rd, 2022, The Melee Asylum. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of RSBNB Update. We're back this week. We have some new episodic content to talk about. Tanis, you're here. Welcome back.
Thank you, Shane.
Can be found in game at Tanis 79. Also, to discuss the new Abyssal Slayer creatures here with us this week is Thaxine. Welcome back.
Did someone say combat balance changes? Hello, I have math.
And don't worry, folks. We'll make sure it's all very nicely accessible.
Yeah, of course.
With that, but if you're joining us for the first time, this is RSVNB Update, a podcast about the weekly RuneScape news and more. If you want to follow along, you can find our full show notes at update.rsvnb.com. You can also join us in Friends Chat, Bits, Bytes, or Discord at rsvnb.com/discord. All right, Abyssal Slayer creatures. I feel like this is a special episode because this is the first episode since the second week of January. We have new content that's not Ninja or Patch Week.
Yay! Well,
this is real content.
Yeah, I know it is for you, eh?
Hey, yeah.
Hey?
Tanis is a real Slayer fiend, aren't you?
I am. It's been one of my favorite skills from the beginning. It's the kind of combat I can get down with, and I wasn't disappointed.
Yeah, I'm glad you were able to take something out of this, because I feel like last year, whenever combat came up, it was either, you know, on the side, you're going to maybe go kill some glacers at the glacier front or some Nodon Dragonkin, but then, oh, all the other combat of 2021 was all about the PVM and bosses. So I do agree with you. It's nice to kind of get back to the root of Slayer and whatnot. So that's good.
Yeah, and quintessential Slayer, in my opinion.
No, I guess what you're meaning is that it's not like a Ripper Demon?
Exactly. I don't know. It's Slayer for the modern times. Like, takes into account the power creep and all the changes that have happened, in my humble opinion.
Because people were saying that the new creatures are chonky, but they're balanced to be handled with the EOC abilities, whereas if you look at your traditional Slayer creatures like Abyssal Demons, Dark Beasts, and whatnot, those still very much have the pre-EOC scaling about them. But
these are up there for me with, like, your rune like the Lords in particular, up there with your rune dragons and your mammoths and your, like, some of your dinosaurs. The, like, big, it's a big health pool with a single mechanic that you can just deal with, and you can just eat food and power through it if you want to.
Yeah,
the other ones are nice. You can cannon ray of cam. They're like have some decent drops. It's good stuff.
Yeah, and they said that.
Good job with these.
They said that the first one, the savages, were designed to effectively be an AFK task. The beasts were designed to have a little bit more interaction to them, where you might need to use some prayers or some more abilities or scrimshaws or whatnot to take down. And then you have the lords, of course, that were designed to be, like you said, at the Rune Dragon kind of level. So definitely something here on the spectrum for everybody. Once again, starting at levels 95, 105, and 115 for all of them. Let's start with where we've been camping or what we've been killing. What have you been? Which ones did you sample, Tanis?
Well, I sampled them all, but done a lot of the savages. They really, for me, they felt like just a modern, updated Abbey Demon, which I love. I thought it's wonderful, and it's not bad money. I mean, for a PVM kind of crowd, it probably sucks, but for Slayer, it's pretty good.
They're really good. I made 2.5 mil from my Lord task.
Yeah, and Lords are probably the lower end because they do have the chance at the drop. Like, the Beast and the Lords are less consistent money because of those drops, but I mean, well, the Beast are... I don't know. I kind of like them all.
We'll talk about the common drops in a bit.
Yeah, we will.
The easiest version of that is that the Savages actually have quite a much larger a number of salvage pieces on their drop table. And so the Savages are actually very good money.
For okay, that explains that.
Because they have quite a few pieces of rune salvage on their drop table. They drop fewer of the other things, but they also have significantly less hit points. So they may be... And that they don't have the uniques on their drop tables. Uniques aside, they may be one of the best actual money out of the three. Time.
Yeah.
That's really neat.
That's what
we'll get into drops in a little bit. Thaxi, I assume you did all three.
Interestingly, I only killed about five of the Savages because I got my soul on my first kill.
Lucky you.
And then I did an entire task at the Beast because the Lords were crowded and I couldn't be bothered. And then I've done probably like half an hour or so of killing the Lords, enough to try a couple of different combat styles and see how it goes.
All right, we'll get into that. I spent most of my time at the Lords, but I want to talk about the environment here. And this was teased in a live stream of using the new point light effects, which for those of us on macOS, we don't have access to that, RIP.
But no, it looks so bad.
Yeah, but if you do have access to that, oh my god, this environment looks wonderful.
It does.
I just, you know, it's hard to get over that this is we're talking about this being a Slayer update, right? But the graphical fidelity in this is just astounding to believe that this wouldn't be something that in another game you'd see as like an expansion or something to that effect. Sheer detail.
We said it during almost every one of the Elder God Wars fronts, but the environment team has been knocking it out of the park recently. Big ups. They did a great job with the verdant arena around Het's area, like the whole nine. They've been doing a very good job, so yeah. Big ups.
Tanis, how is it for you? Because I know it's a relatively dark environment. How is it for you accessibility-wise?
Passable. Passable. I turned my stuff down for a little bit better contrast.
Okay.
But that's, I mean, I just have to. But I didn't have to go to a different skybox or anything.
Right. So. There's one spot near the crematory in here and the morgue where you can see the glow from that furnace running. And this is definitely where you would feel the point lighting if you had that. But the way the game is casting the shadow on your person based on the light coming out of the furnace, I just had to stop for a minute and realize that this was RuneScape, when in reality this could be any AAA game at this point in terms of the way the lighting was being done. Obviously, the character model leaves a bit to be desired, but still, the lighting and shadowing on this was wonderful. And I think that's probably going to make its way into the thumbnail for this episode. And for people watching on YouTube, I'm showing that off right now. And if you're on audio, check it out at youtube.com/rsbnb. But I just really love the environment. Nice transitions between light and dark and just how everything all interacts together. And it's all one flowing map, too, in terms of the height. It starts off at a higher level and then you go down into actual numerous pits, and just the way they did the map, you don't actually realize that you've gone down that far until you're actually there, which is quite something to see with itself too. So
right.
Once again,
and I first went in here and I didn't realize that I could actually get to the lower area. I thought I had to get a key from the Savages because there was a locked gate and you had to like sneak around the side of it to go further. So
yeah, it turns out that gate is the comp requirement of this entire area. You got to get the key from the Lords,
right.
And then attach
that rope. In the music track.
Yeah, and then we also got the book as a master quest requirement as well. So there is now
the souls.
Yeah, the
souls got added as a trim requirement. So you added basically one requirement for each cape, which is a good way to do that. I think.
Yeah, yeah, I think so.
They added appropriate things,
and you know, there's always going to be that continuous discussion about. should the Master Quest Cape have such high combat requirement of 115 Slayer. But I think we got something like 109 now currently, previously before this, yes. If I remember correctly.
No, because the drop that required 109 is the Magister Journals, which are a guaranteed drop from the Magister, but can also drop from any Slayer creature. So technically, they only required 96 Slayer. So this actually increases the Slayer level required for the Master Quest Cape by 13 levels up to 109.
Right, because you could use the stew and whatnot to fight these.
But oh no, true. You needed 99 right? before actually. So you needed 99 because you had to have 110 Slayer souls. So this technically is a 10 level increase. By the time you actually obtain those souls, it's probably a 4 to 5 level increase. Not huge, but it's definitely a lot of Slayer that they added onto Master Quest.
Yeah. All right. Let's dive into these then, because we've talked about the environment and we've talked about getting there and whatnot, obviously. So I think with this, we should just start off talking about the launch of the creatures on the day of. And there are so many people wanting to fight these that they did something that they hadn't done in a long time. They had to hotfix in an instance cap on the Centistan Asylum so that in each instance now there can only be a max of 6 players because everybody was in there crowding it out. And this will be in place until March
27th. I hadn't seen the end date on it.
Yeah.
Oh, that's good. Mm-hmm. I like that a lot. I mean, it's one of those things where they could have made it 4 or 5 times as large, but then that's a lot of environment work, and it just feels, you know, too sprawling, potentially. Yeah. The instancing, since it seems like it was something they were able to put together pretty quickly, seems like a great solution for a lot of the crowding that's been going on for, you know, new updates. Everybody wants to come and play to reclaim their capes, to see the new toy, right? And this that seems like a good way to do it. I was worried that they were going to solo instance it, which would make co-op Slayer really challenging.
Just would have been too quiet, you know?
Right. 6 players, you still get that feeling of like, oh yeah, people are here. This is a living part of this game. But it's not enough that you're like, there's 40 cannons on the Lord's area.
Let's be honest, it was really hectic on day one there with the cannons involved. Tanis, did you have any problem with that?
Well, I didn't go until after it was fixed, because I wasn't going to deal with that. I knew that was going to be a shit show, so I just waited to see what would happen.
And you know,
I'll just they have numbers on how many people have gone before.
Yeah,
and after.
It would. But as far as I understand with this, the idea was just to do the temporary instance, which is okay with me, because that was one of my initial concerns, was is this going to just be something that's going to be permanently instanced forever on this? But I'm glad to see that it's only temporary.
Great.
So, all right.
So
we're going to talk about some of the creatures and how you want to fight them. Who do we want to start with here? You want to start at the top end or the bottom end?
Let's say start at the bottom end, right?
I think we start at the bottom end.
All right.
I think we start with the savages.
Yeah, so the savages, as far as I can tell, I don't think that there's really anything necessary to say about them. Just go out there and treat them like you would a regular Slayer task. You can use pretty much any combat style you want on them.
The time you have 95 Slayer, you have the skills you need to kill these
have
very
the
easily.
To kill them very easily.
Yep.
Beasts, I didn't fight these, so what do we need to know about these?
I mean, you can soul split them up to 1 or 2 at a time. More than that, you kind of need to have protect melee on. Obviously they all drop ashes, so if you have your ectoplasmator on, you have infinite prayer to use soul split and your stat boosting prayer if you just wear a demon horn necklace with an attuned ectoplasmator, which is really nice. It's convenient. It makes, you know, one of your resource grinds much easier. Drop the helm. Worth noting.
Yes, the helm.
Otherwise, they're 30,000 life points. These feel to me, like damage-wise, these feel like Ripper Demons to me.
Oh, really?
Obviously.
Minus the special.
Yeah, maybe a little less damage than that. Or some of the early level dinosaurs or vile plumes, they're very much on that kind of a range of like, these will hurt you if you try to attack multiple of them at once. But if you do one at a time, you can soul split it and just kind of like vaguely AFK. They have a nice aggro. They do the usual game aggro timer for 10 minutes or whatever it is, where you can just kind of stand in a corner against a wall and they'll teleport around you a little bit, but it's fine. Keep your auto retaliate on armor spikes and just let them go.
Yeah, we'll come back to armor spikes too, because that's a fun thing. Go ahead.
Yeah.
For this one, where the savages, I felt like were a modernized Abbey Demon. I felt like these were a modernized Red Spot. Where
oh, really?
You
okay.
Don't go down there, and or at least I don't run aggro if I'm not hitting all of them because you'll get your ass kicked. And so this, you kind of I single them, right? But I don't have a, I'm not ashamed. I ain't ashamed to eat. I ain't ashamed to one target something like that's fine.
You don't mind taking multiple trips to the bank? Yeah,
exactly. No, and
also,
and yeah, if. If you run out of money, though, I think it's important to note, like, I was running penance just because I didn't really need the extra
their drops DPS are,
or vamp.
Drops I, are,
it, yeah, it kept my prayer up for just doing soul split with the soul's amulet.
And like we mentioned earlier, their common drops are really nice. They drop, like, I think there's a thing for a lot of the stuff down here that, you know, like, they drop, these drop onyx bolts. Just regular old onyx tip rune bolts that alk for 9k a piece. So if you just bring alks, you can do it. Alking from keybind won't interrupt combat. So you can alk while you're just killing them. It's really nice. Just get some passive income. A little bit less AFK, but.
Interesting.
Frees up an inventory slot.
Another fun thing with these ones is that if you're on an Abbey Demon test, they'll take your kill count down by 2, whereas the Savages will take it down by 1.
The Lords by 5.
Yeah,
Lords by 5. Speaking of the Lords.
Yeah, Tanis, which was your favorite to kill of the 3?
Oh. I think the nostalgia of the Savages wins me over. But then again, I haven't had the thrill of one of those big old 150 or 400 mil drops.
Oh, no.
Which might
change
my mind.
They're not that high. They're not that high.
Did they drop?
Yeah.
Whip's at the time of recording, Whip is about 300 and Helm is about 105, 110.
Okay, so yeah, I mean, it dropped some, but that's still a hell of a Slayer drop.
Yeah, it's a nice payday. It's a nice payday.
For sure.
I mean, I don't.
The wiki is saying the Whip rate, as of right now, based on their drop data, is a 1 in 1,000 to 1 in 1,500.
Oh, so my God.
We were thinking 1 in 2,000 on release day, but yeah. I mean, if you think that a task for these is to kill 60 of them, you'd still have to do, like, 15 tasks to get a whip. But, I mean, that's 2 whips a month if you do a task of these every day, of the Lords every day. So 2 whips a month is 600 mil a month. That'll pay for your bonds.
You know, I wish this was around when I was going for 120 Slayer, honestly.
Oh, yeah. I bet. It's hard to pick a favorite just because, like, I think they did a really good job at making them.
The amount of effort I want to put in defines which one is going to be my favorite on the day. That's my opinion on it. Yeah. I like the beasts, I think, overall, because I like that middle ground of, like, vaguely AFK-able, but, like, I can still flex my skills but not have to pay too much attention, you know? I like that.
All right, let's move on to the Lords. 115 Slayer required, of course. These will take your kill count down by 5, and they have a tentacle attack that will deal a good deal of damage to you, and you definitely want to kill those tentacles as soon as they spawn. I went there and tried to range these things, and, you know, honestly, I think the best way, and what everybody seems to have defaulted to with this, is that if you're going to try and kill the Lords, it's best to probably use some sort of cannon to take out the tentacles, and then just have you doing primary damage to one or two of the Lords around you at the same time.
Roll deck coils, especially upgrade roll deck coils, should one-shot them. They've only got 750 life points. So
yeah, my standard old deck coil was one-shotting them, so it was fine.
The flurry ability or any AoE, really. No charge time detonate probably would kill them.
I was also using blood magic as well, and I still had to eat some sharks through it. So the Lords are definitely a task where you're going to be focusing on and trying to do.
You can't AFK these.
Lean forward combat.
Yeah,
no, you
probably
can't.
My opinion on these are, like, but if you like Corp, you'll love the Lords.
They feel very similar to Corp, too. Corp's got 100,000 life points, damage price. Yeah. Yeah.
That's
similar
interesting.
Damage.
Interesting.
Good comparison, actually. Yeah.
All right.
Corp the Slayer monster. And talking about ways that people have killed these, right?
Yeah,
you've got your, like Shane was mentioning, you've got your standard animate dead, all that coil blood magic, and you know, throw in a vampora, and you can kind of just, maybe that's your AFK situation. Something that I've been asked about this week that I think is worth mentioning is the Abyssal Bane equipment. Just mentioning, right, there's bolts and arrows, there's a swords, and there's a shield. And each of those things has a slightly different mechanic, right? The bolts have increased accuracy and damage, the swords have increased damage, and the shield has a reflect mechanic on it. And so, I mean, the way that you think about this is that the bolts are tier, what is it? When you are using them on an abyssal target, their damage tier is about tier 88, which is to say that the bolts are actually worse than their accuracy tier is much higher than that. Their accuracy tier is your main is your actual weapon accuracy tier plus whatever percent. So they're pretty much guaranteed to hit. So if you're on an abyssal boss, because the bosses have double the defensive values basis versus like a slayer monster, right? These are slayer monsters. So their defensive values, you don't need the extra accuracy. The bolts don't, that accuracy bonus doesn't matter. But the damage bonus, they're tier 88. You're going to be better off with ascension bolts or similar if you're trying to range these. Or Rakshite arrows or whatever your, you know, your choice is.
According to the wiki, these have an armor value of 2765.
Yeah, right. It's your standard tier 90 something armor value. It's very common. Which, you know, just again, based on the way that bosses work, you should have full accuracy on these, more or less. You shouldn't be missing a whole lot. Especially with Abyssal, because the Abyssal equipment also gets gets an affinity value of 90 just applied to it automatically, in addition to the accuracy value bonus. So, I mean, you shouldn't have to worry about the accuracy on these. Next up, the next thing to mention with these is the swords, right? The Abyssal Bane swords are a similar thing, except that they're tier 80. The bolts are tier 60 damage, the swords are tier 80. They still get that plus 25% damage buff, which when you compare it to something like the Terrasaur Maul, right? Terrasaur Maul has, I'm going to just triple check to make sure that I'm not lying to myself here, but it's, yeah, plus 12.5% damage. So this is twice as much damage bonus as the Terrasaur Maul. So these are going to be slightly higher than tier 100 damage. When you use both swords or the two-handed sword or the sword and shield. Now, the counterpoint to that is that if you, you know, same thing with the bolts, right? If you don't have a tier 90 range weapon, the bolts or the arrows are going to be your best option because they'll act as that higher range, that higher damage value. The swords will do the same, except that in this case, obviously being above tier 100, you're not going to have a weapon that's better, with the exception of the enhanced Darklight after Dimension of Disaster. That thing has a damage tier that's like 128. It's something that it does 2.5 times the damage. And so it's got, like, the actual ability damage value on it is, like, you have to multiply it by a large multiplier in addition to all of the accuracy buffs that it gets, in addition to being automatically a high affinity value on all of the targets it works on. The Darklight is absolutely the best damage per second output on these if we didn't have to think about anything else, right? If it was just a person with a weapon, the Darklight is the best weapon to use on these. With that said, though, that also depends somewhat on your offhand. And the thing to note with these is that you have to use, again, both swords if you want the Abyssal bonus. So you can't like use your Dark Light with an offhand Abyssal Bane sword. It won't do anything. You're better off with the Drygor or, you know, a Fury Blade or a Ripper Claw, whatever you're going to do for your offhand. The last thing that I'm going to mention, so both, effectively what I'm saying is that both of those, like, Abyssal Bane options, you have better options, you probably shouldn't use them. With that said, the third item is the shield. And this is one of those things that, like, ooh, shields, switches, ooh, that's...
This is, I think, where we want Tadis' opinion.
Yeah. So here's the thing about the shield. Shield has a reflect mechanic. Every time you get hit, it does half of your current defense level, including boost. So if you're at 120 defense, it will reflect 60 damage with your Elder Overloads, 56 with your regular overloads, or 56, I think. And the every time you get hit by a creature that's susceptible to it. Which, on its own, that's nothing, right? 60 extra damage when something hits you every 4 ticks. That's like, you know, 60 times 25, whatever, you know, 1,500 damage a minute or something. That's a joke, right? Not worth using the shield over something else. The thing that makes it potentially worth using here is actually something that's not been used in a long time very many places, is the ability called Revenge. It's in the defensive spellbook. What it does is, once you activate it, it's active for 20 seconds, and every time you get hit during those 20 seconds, your damage goes up by 10%. Normally, your offhand is one-third of your offensive value. What that means is that when you hit 5 stacks of Revenge, once you've been hit 5 times, your main hand, just using main hand and shields, you can still use defensives and everything, you're still doing more damage than you would do if you had main hand and offhand equipped. Now, this is only ever used in situations where you're getting hit very rapidly by things. Which brings us to these Abyssal Lords, which summon these tentacles. Now, there's two parts to this, right? You want to get the tentacles out of the way because they do a lot of damage. And you want to be doing a lot of damage to your target, or at least mitigating a lot of damage while you have this up. So the shield allows you to use the reflect ability to send some damage back on your targets, and the revenge ability, which allows you to do more damage. So you can be doing effectively 133% damage by using the revenge ability with the shield every time those tentacles come up, because the tentacles will kill themselves on your shield, because the reflect value from armor spikes doubles when you have a shield on. So your armor spikes will reflect 198 damage, and your shield will reflect up to 60 damage every time you get attacked. So with the reflect ability on, you'll also reflect some damage back. So in 2 to 3 attacks from these tentacles, they will kill themselves while you're still focused on the Lord. And you're suddenly doing extra damage to the Lord because you were attacked, and you're mitigating extra damage.
Now let's talk about the fun part about what your main hand and offhand setup is going to be when you don't have a tentacle out.
Well, I mean, main hand and offhand, you're just using the dark light through this entire thing,
yeah,
because dark light is busted.
Right.
And just offhand, you can use dry gore, you can use any of those things I just mentioned, right? You're just normal melee offhands.
Yeah.
And then you switch. You could do something similar with a defender, even if you wanted to. If you wanted a defender camp, just know that it will take longer to kill those tentacles, so you will probably take more damage.
Right.
In the process. But that's the thing, is like that Abyssal Bane shield does that extra reflect damage. It gives you access to the shield. The revenge ability is really good here because it will then kill those targets that are attacking you and just leave you doing extra damage onto the Lord.
I like the
I tried
way this
out
setup
today
sounds.
And it was just a ton of fun to, like, yeah, whenever you see tentacles, you put on your shield, you use revenge, then reflect, and you just let them kill themselves. In about 3 seconds, 3-4 seconds, they're dead, and you now have 15 seconds where you're doing extra damage onto your target. It's really cool. Big fan that that's a thing that you can do. And also, it's not something I see other people doing, so if you don't feel like all that coiling, you don't have it unlocked, whatever it is, get yourself an Abyssal Bane shield. They're about 500k.
Then if you had Masterwork as well, you could rope that into it to bring some of the damage down as well. So I like that idea. I'm going to give that a try next time I go there. Try it with that combat style.
I wish you could just roll with it all the way through. It would be kind of neat to have sword and board relevant.
Yeah.
I
think you could. I think if you threw on even like a tier 70 defender, just a Barrow's defender, I mean, you can use neither Reflect nor Revenge scale with shield tier. So you could use a tier 1 shield and get the same benefits as you get with the tier 80s. I just mentioned the Abyssal Bane because that extra Reflect damage guarantees them killed in 3 hits with armor spikes. Even normal armor spikes, right? Not the alloy ones. But you could do this with just like even your dragon defenders. It would totally work. And your damage drops by 1/6, slightly over 1/6 actually. It's almost 20% if you use like a tier 70 defender versus a Dragor. But that 20% damage, you can also mitigate a lot of damage by having this on. So it's very much a like find the balance that works for you. I wouldn't judge somebody for coming to these with a defender cap, actually, because of that reason. Because whenever those tentacles spawn, you reflect revenge, and suddenly you're hitting like a absolute truck.
So how do you feel about this now, Tanis? Because I know we were talking about whether or not you would feel fine with the shield switch involved in this.
This was probably the only case where I would consider it. Yeah, I mean, I would consider it, but I'm actually more intrigued with the idea of being able
to... using the Defender?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's an option. But yeah, that's my... I mean, and again, the reflectability reflects half the damage you take, so the tentacles will kill themselves in one or two hits with that anyways, even if you probably didn't have armor spikes. So maybe it's overkill, but...
But hey, we like overkill.
It's a ton of fun, and melee has the... adrenaline to use it now, which we'll talk about in just a second.
Yeah,
but also to move us along, unless somebody's got something else on that, I wanted to mention the common drops before we talked about.
Yeah, we definitely need to do that because somebody in this wanted to see an infusion of Wine as Amarak into the game from the Lords.
Boy, did we!
Also, we got Dwarfweeds, Lantadimes, Cadentine, Toadflax, Avanto, and Irrit. All grimy.
What are your favorites, Shane?
I know, I know. At this point, I'm basically farming spirit weed.
And then, double down on that, they have the beasts drop Grenwall spikes instead of Wines of Zimmerek, I believe. They drop one of the other overload ingredients. And the savages drop... I had this pulled up.
You know, that I'm
the savages, they all drop Pure Essence, which is expensive right now because of all the runes people are going through. The Grenwall spikes from the savages.
People might not think this is good, but I remember hearing from the Slayer side of it and the Skilling side of it when all the God Wars fronts were coming out. They said, give us similar drops on the non-bossing side. Here we are.
I mean, here's the deal, right? Is like you've mentioned before, Dennis, is that you should have things that come from Skilling should continue to come from Skilling. As much as possible, things that are used in combat should continue to be coming from combat, right? All of the supplies for your artisan skills should come from your gathering skills. But the things that you use for combat coming from combat seems like a good alternative to that. And effectively what they're doing is they're just throwing a ton of overload supplies at us and some like mud runes and soul runes and pure essence. Like they're adding in like the runes that are being used for things. They're doing the supplies that people don't want to gather anymore. And I think that that's very neat. I think they've done a very good job with these drop tables.
The only issue I have
is the amount of gold on these drop tables, both in literal gold, in that like the Lords can drop 50k to 140k just straight coins. and of course, obviously, all of the like alchemical bolts and bolt tips, and all the salvage, especially on the savages, it's a lot of money.
Another thing I noticed, and I don't know if you Thaxi have enough of a sample size to realize this yet. It felt like the Lords were reining in crystal Triskelion pieces.
I didn't have attention to that. Also, okay, let's be fair and frank about the value of a crystal Triskelion.
Yeah,
it's like 150k.
Yeah, it's not
unless you get
it's not good, but it's always just been a very uncommon drop. And in the 2 days, I completed 2.5 keys just from doing this.
Yeah. So Wiki has them listed as uncommon, so it should be, you know, 1 in 100, 1 in 50, something in that kind of a range.
It was really like if you're using your mask and look at the dwarves. Rare drop table was popping off for me. And I got a ton of clues, and I hate clues, but I got a shitload of them. So, like, if you're a clue hunter, the beast, have at it, Hoss, because they drop them.
It's actually good. The other thing to mention in that similar vein is charms. They're not a great charm dropper. They have a very similar charm table to Abyssal Demons, where they'll about a third of the time they'll drop a Crimson Charm, but the other charms, really low chance, almost no blue charms. So they're not a great summoning, which, again, we have the Arc Glacier now, our Lord and Savior of summoning. Why would we need anything else to drop charms? But, yeah, these aren't astounding charm droppers, and they don't need to be, given they have, their drop table is plenty good, so I'm fine with that, but... It's worth noting.
All right. So let's get into what everybody wants to hear about, the Jaws of the Abyss. We got to talk about this one first because I honestly feel like this is something that's undervalued on its current exchange price.
I mean, it's a Slayer drop. It's
probably, you know, where it should be, but I feel it's worth way more than it is right now.
I had mixed opinions about this when it came out.
Let me just say what it does first, and then you can say what that
is. Yeah, let's do that.
So this is the helmet, the tier 85 melee power helmet. When you wear it, all bleeds that you put on your targets will increase the adrenaline gain by 2%.
It's specifically all damage over time, not necessarily bleeds.
Oh, okay. And it's 1% in PvP. And yeah. People were saying that we needed a way to raise adrenaline when we were using melee. Here it is.
This is it. They did it. Boy, did they do it.
Anywhere that I'm going to be using my masterwork now, I'm going to be using this helmet.
Yeah. I mean, I think this is... I really like the design on this, right? When it came out, I had mixed opinions on attaching, like, Millie's Adrenaline Producer to a big, like, one-purchase item, right? You just have this thing and it works. Obviously, you have to repair it, but that's, you know, relatively chump change.
Yeah.
But then, you know, thinking about it, it fits very well into the theme, the historic theme of melee items, which is like God Swords, right? You buy the thing once and it's expensive, but then you have this really good thing, and then that's it. You just have it. You don't need to upkeep. There's no, like, the magic and range equivalent of this are Incite Fear, making Tsunami an ability you can use to produce a bunch of extra adrenaline, and range having Hydrox Bolts, right? This is the melee equivalent of that, where, like, instead of being consumed, it's just an item you have. That feels very melee to me, and I wasn't sure, but I think I like it in that theme.
Oh, yeah, I think it's a no-brainer for anybody who's going to be doing Slayer. You can say something more nuanced now.
I mean, it's a no-brainer if you're doing melee and you're not using this, and you can afford it. You've made a mistake.
110 mil right now. And I think at this point, coming into this discussion, at this point, Tanis, would you purchase this right now based on what we've been talking about? I don't even know how much
I wouldn't purchase it, but I would hunt it.
Okay.
Yeah. So, total tangent, I actually did get one of these on my fifth kill. On task, but still.
Good for you.
Yeah, I just bought two of them, one for my main, one for the alt, because they were 110 mil at the time, and I said, they might drop further, but this is worth it for me, and I imagine there's a lot of other people that have done the same, and that's why it's stalled price where it has. I think it'll probably land in a similar place to Cinderbane's, if I had to guess, based on the drop rate and the number of people that are going to do these as a Slayer task. Potentially a little higher, because people might prefer the Lords over these once they get the Slayer level to do so. Kind of hard to say. And of course, the deal with this, kind of like the deal with Cinderbane, is like, you want to use this. Like, it's very easy to keep a lot of bleeds onto a target with melee these days, right? You've got a threshold bleed, you've got a basic bleed, you've got the armor. So we're about to talk about the armor spikes and the whip. They have a passive that is technically a bleed damage over time for these. I like it because, I mean, for one thing, just talking about what it does, right? It's like, for the most part, in most cases, it's like plus 30 to 50% adrenaline on melee, which is humongous, right? That's like 30 to 50% more really powerful abilities you can get out. That's an extra several thresholds a minute that, you know, is supporting your extra defensive uses, like all of these things. It is just melee had a lot of abilities and a lot of special attacks that were really good that it just couldn't use, right? Like the cold cuts, the Leng blades made it so you could use destroy and hurricane, but like then you have three or four good thresholds, and if you're doing that, you can't use Berserk every minute, and like it just rotation wise it didn't make a whole lot of sense. And so this is they accepted that melee is the bleed combat style now, and they said we're gonna lean into that and really make it different from the other combat styles in its own kind of unique way, but still this is putting a whole lot of power into it.
I feel like it's a very important piece of the puzzle. And anybody who is working with melee is definitely going to want to have one of these. I'm trying to think of a situation where you might not want to use this.
There's not one. Frankly, it's got some... Like, the other thing was that it only makes things better, and it makes so many things better, right? It makes a lot of items more useful, like things like the attacker's insignia from Barbarian Assault. It's like a 2-4% damage increase depending on your damage output. So like the thing is bad. Please, you know, it's very, very cheap to upkeep, but it's not a lot of damage. It's less than a scrimshaw. It's much less than a god book. And it has about a 40-50% uptime, which means that you're producing, like, again, each bleed you have on is 25% more adrenaline, effectively, over your base. And so it means you get 10-12% more adrenaline, which, you know, is an extra threshold or two per minute, which might make it competitive with the god books, right? Like, they've made this kind of really niche item much better. Similar interactions, right? It synergizes really well with the Masterworks Spear. Your bleeds lasting longer means you get more basics that give you more adrenaline. So the Masterworks Spear got a big buff with this. The Exec Kill, the Zook Sword, obviously, like, the special attack on that is a bleed. And the new, again, the new passive on the Spikes and Whip extends the bleed from the Exec Kill Sword. Because again, a lot of people have the sword, I'm sad to say, in an EOF, so you can use it with the whip, but even if you don't, you can use it with the spikes. And so that'll extend the length of that special attack, and that special attack is a bleed that will give you increased damage with the helm. Like, they've done a lot of good things with these drops, where they synergize all very, very well with the helm, and the helm increases the power, effectively, of all of these strong melee items. Like, it's a really cool synergistic way to buff things, and I'm a big fan of it.
Yeah, and, you know, with that, I think it's going to be used practically everywhere. If you have the money, you'll get one when you're doing Slayer. If you're bossing with Melee, you're definitely going to want to do that, though at this point, I don't know which boss you'd take Melee to when you have two good options in
magic
and ranged.
It's like anything. We can't say it enough, but, like, you should play the game the way that you want to. You can play the game however you want to.
True.
In talking with David was going to be on the show tonight, right? And he unfortunately wasn't able to, but he was telling me kind of his thoughts on a lot of this stuff, that he's thinking that at places where it works, like, melee is now potentially rivaling magic as a viable way to do hard mode Karapak. And those kind of things. And so, you know, melee got a huge buff, and a large part of that is the helm. And the other parts, you know, the next couple drops that we'll talk about help too. But the helm was huge. The helm gave melee what it's needed for a long time, which is just massively increased adrenaline gain. It's a little bit unfortunate that it's a high-level drop. But the price on it, I think it could be... This helm could have tier 1 stats...
And it would still be
worth well over a bill. Like, people would pay well over a bill for it if it was rare enough to do it, right? They've made it common enough that everybody can use
this. Oh, yeah, that's what we were talking
about.
He said if this was on the Zuck table, it'd easily be a bill plus.
I mean, they've made it common enough that people can use the fun thing to do the fun thing. They've made it makes melee competitive in the high-tier PVM environment again, in my opinion at least, as far as I'm able to tell. Good job. My only issue with the helm, and I do consider this a large issue, is that it really, really, every part of this helm just looks like you are wearing an old used pencil eraser on your head. Like, you could just stick like a yellow number 2 pencil coming out of like somebody's neck on like and down, and like it would look right. Like, that it would look appropriate. I don't think people would notice. Like, it looks like a dirty pencil eraser.
And I mean, if that's the only complaint,
you did so
good
with the environment, and then you designed this nonsense. Get out of here. We'll talk about my opinion on the cosmetics of things more when we talk about the Yak Track in a moment.
All right, Tanis, anything else on the helmet as a Slayer aficionado on this?
No, I mean, this helmet... I mean, it just feels like a lot of modernization of things that existed, you know, prior. I'm not comparing this to the Corrupted Slayer helmet, but I'm saying where that one, or just Slayer helmets of old, focused on accuracy when accuracy was a thing. Mm-hmm. This is focusing on adrenaline, and and it just, I don't know, it just kind of gives me that same kind of feel, and I think it was a. It's better than I thought it would be, for sure.
All right, armor spikes next.
I was mentioning earlier the bleed. These armor spikes have a 25% chance to apply the new parasite bleed to your target when you get hit. The tooltips on them do not include the old armor spike information and text about what the armor spikes do. They do still apparently work the same. Do not quote me on this. I did a test with about 500 alloy armor spikes, abyssal armor spikes, and I didn't see the large proc on them, so I'm not. I think that might be bugged right now, but eventually, assuming that it should just be that it's your armor spikes, your alloy armor spikes effect. And on top of that, every time you get hit, you have a 25% chance to apply a parasite bleed stack to your target. Let's talk about the parasite bleed stack and how that works, and then we'll talk about how these are balanced. The parasite
because I have
bleed,
a big question about this that I'll ask you after you run through this.
Yeah. The parasite bleed stacks up to a max of 50 stacks, and the average damage on it is 25 damage per stack. It ticks every 1.3 seconds for a total of 5 ticks, or 1.8 seconds, every 3 game ticks, sorry. Every 3 game ticks, every 1.8 seconds for a total of 5 ticks. It ticks 5 times. Each stack, 25 damage a stack, ticks every global cooldown, right? The global cooldown, you can use an ability every 1.8 seconds. Equally, every 1.8 seconds, the damage from these will go off. So it's an extra little bit of damage every time you use an ability, effectively, right? Stacks every time you get hit. The issue with these spikes, right? So they're really good. They're really good with the helm. Their primary value is that when you have the spike bleed on a target and you attack that target, you get 2% extra adrenaline. So you're very often going to have that when you're using these spikes. That they will be used and should be used almost everywhere. The counterpoint to that is that the incredible majority of monsters in RuneScape have a 4-tick attack speed. There is a singular regular monster, which is Zoyana, which has a 2-tick attack speed, and a handful of things with 3, and quite a few, especially larger monsters and boss monsters that have 5, 6, and 7, and 8-tick attack speeds. But most everything has a 4-tick. Pretty much everything in Slayer has a 4-tick attack speed. 4-ticks means that if you have a 1 in 4 chance to apply these bleeds, 4-ticks means you get 16 ticks total that you expect, every 16 ticks you expect to apply a stack of this. 9 seconds is 15 ticks. So if you expect the bleed to fall off after 15 ticks and apply every 16th tick, the average of when of the number of stacks going onto your target and the number of stacks falling off of your target, you'll err on the side of not having it active more often than you'll have it active on a standard target.
And that was my next question is, are these going to be activating enough to see the abyssal bleed proc on them?
So again, the bleed proc is so little damage, but there's two saving graces to it. One of them is the helm. The other is that they can activate poison. So it's an extra 33 hits a minute that can activate poison. So it is 5,000 to 7,000 damage a minute extra of poison damage on your target. Also, the other effect of these stacks is that when you kill a target that has these stacks on it, half of the stacks rounded up are applied to every other target within 2 squares, right? Scythe range of the thing that you kill. Which is awesome, right? So if you're killing something within 9 seconds and you're like aggropotting, cough, abyssal demons,
yep.
You can spread these stacks and keep them spreading and up them yourself just by killing the things you're attacking. You can get massive stacks of these on targets and do really significant damage to a very large number of targets aggropotting with these. Downside to that, of course, is that you're being attacked by quite a few targets, so you burn through these spikes very quickly. Which, again, they're really good, right? You're going to produce a bunch of extra adrenaline, you get a bunch of extra damage, at least from poison, if not from the actual spikes themselves, which you probably won't in most cases because they'll fall off. The stacks will fall off. The bleed will fall away. And the problem with these is actually, in my mind, the drop rate. So I was wondering on the drop rate of all of these things, right? The helm drop rate, the helm price is going to directly relate to the drop rate. Same with the scourge.
Yep.
The whip we'll talk about next. Spike drop rate I'm actually happy with the drop rates of both the Helm and the Scourge from what we've seen so far. The drop rate of the Abyssal Flesh that you use to make these spikes, I think, is much, much, much too low. When I was using these to kill one or two Abyssal Beasts at a time, I was losing them. I was not able to maintain. I brought 500 with me, and I ended up with about 300 making them while I was there.
Oh, boy.
Using all the flesh I got. And the beasts drop flesh in a 4 to 8 drop at a time, same with the savages, somewhere in that range, while the lords drop 2 at a time, guaranteed on task. So for the other two, it's not a guaranteed drop. And for the lords, it is guaranteed, but it's a much lower value. And with the lords, you're definitely getting hit more than 20 times, chances are, by the time you kill them. So if you wanted to use melee at these places, you're not walking away with any of this flesh. The drop rates on it are very low. Which I will be surprised if the drop rates are not adjusted if the price of this flesh is under 10k gold apiece, which means 1,000 gold per armor spike.
So it looks like the guaranteed income then from all these tasks is going to be the flesh money.
I think so. I mean, again, unless it gets changed, and I really hope it gets changed because it's so cool and it's so nice and it's accessible to everybody, but it's still like these are going to become at this rate like the old Hydrix bolts. Like, you're not going to be able to use it anymore.
Yeah,
because
that's
it's going to be
point.
So prohibitively expensive. Which is really disappointing because it's such a cool thing to be able to have this bleed applied on and stuff that then works with the helm really well.
Do you think this will reinvigorate people's interest in armor spikes? Because I know that when I use melee, when I was doing Slayer, I didn't even use armor spikes.
I mean, the problem with armor spikes, of course, is the time you had to take to smith them.
Right.
Not really the cost. The alloy ones were, 60 gold apiece. Again, the flesh would be, 1,000 gold per armor spike. There's your comparison.
I don't know if that feels like it's worth it when you put that kind of price on it per spike.
Really does. It's not. That's the thing. It's not. It's not worth it. It's better damage. It's up there with your Grim or your old Hydra.
So you're going to use this then if you're going just to add that extra damage on if you're doing, like we said, hard mode care pack melee base.
Well, and I hope they adjust the drop rate on the flesh. I think it's not high enough. I think if the drop rate, it's something that is a unique drop to these, right? Like, they're not going to just add Abyssal Flesh to another boss monster unless they make an Abyssal boss, which would be cool. Maybe that's what's going to happen. Maybe that's why these don't drop a lot of it. Maybe that's our fifth boss. Ooh, maybe. Maybe Zerah is going to come back and bring an Abyssal boss from the primordial Abyssals that he found while he was in Erebus. Well, that was what he was searching. Who knows, right? That'd be cool. But unless that happens, unless they do something to... Because I don't feel like this is a drop you just add to a random boss at drop table.
No.
They need to change... They need to have more of this come into the game if they want people to use it regularly. That's my opinion. Take it or leave it.
So at the end of the day, then, the spikes are definitely a nice damage boost. They're just very expensive to use. Like you said, started raining Hydrix everywhere.
And I think both Jedix and... us, me in particular, by making these very bold claims, we'll have to kind of see where the price ends up. And I haven't tested the price today, but the price was 3 or 4k a piece as of, I think, Wednesday when I was buying a bunch of my stuff. So, which was yesterday, wasn't it? About 30 hours ago.
Yeah. And it doesn't feel like that would be
it's just
something
going up.
You'd invest for with Slayer. Yeah. So.
Yeah. But I would love to use them. They'd be great for Slayer.
Right. And I mean, if the price did come down, you can absolutely see that. But on the other hand, this is a nice payday for Tanis right here if you go do your savages.
I mean, I think the price on them would be balanced if you dropped a lot of much larger stacks of flesh and they dropped cost about 600. I think, 500, 600. I would like to double the price of alloy armor spikes. I would like these to be a similar, you go from regular spikes or to alloy, is similar prices going from regular spikes to abyssal spikes. I think that it should be 600 to 700 gold apiece for flush. That's what I would like it to land at. And if that means that they have to times 10 the drop rates on these, which I think it does, to be clear, then that's what they have to do. But
right.
Whatever.
Tanis, any questions on these before we move on to the Scourge?
No, not really. I mean, I thought I was, doing pretty well with the savages and getting the flesh, but
you use it so fast.
Yeah,
that's the
I mean,
issue.
Right, and I hadn't even tried using the spikes, so.
Which, yeah. Again, before we move to the Scourge, important to note, the spikes are very good when combined with the Scourge, so let's talk about that.
Indeed, let's. The tier 92 whip, everybody's always wanted a whip that can be used at the very high end. You can use this now if you wanted to do dual wield setup with one of the offhand cold cuts from the Glacier, or an offhand Kopesh if you wanted to keep it at tier 92. But I mean, let's be real here. You're going to be better off with the one of the cold cuts. So we're looking at about 300 mil ish right now for this as of recording on Thursday. Tier 92 main hand weapon has a chance to apply the, or it, for each melee attack, it will apply the Abyssal Parasite stack. You can stack it up to 50 times with this. And when you, of course, kill the creature, that parasite spreads to adjacent targets.
So, I mean, there's so much, the interaction work on this is so much to unpack. I mean, let's do a quick thing on how it works, right? It applies this to parasite stacks up to, again, a max of 50, same as the spikes. This is the problem. What this means is that you have to be attacking the same target for over a minute to fully stack this. If the target's attacking you, you get a few stacks from armor spikes. That's going to help with that. It's going to decrease that time somewhat. And if you have, a large stack of stacks, it's transferred from an adjacent target. You can make sure that you lure your previous target next to your next target before it dies. If you put in the extra effort there, and maybe it'll be half a minute to stack this. But there's not a lot of things that you attack for that long in this
hard
game.
Hard mode care pack,
Hard mode care pack. A care pack is a great place because he can't shed stacks. He doesn't have any vulnerability mechanics. And he doesn't have any phase change mechanics.
The wiki actually has a list of the Abyssal Parasite hit ranges. For two stacks, you're looking between 37 and 62. You go up to 10, it's between...
It's 25 per stack. It's 25 per stack. So two stacks is 50, three stacks is 75, four stacks is 100. It averages to that value.
Yeah, okay. It's,
don't need to terribly overcomplicate this. At 50 stacks, you're doing 1,250 damage on average every time it hits.
Maximum 1,562.
Correct, yep. So 900 to 1,500-ish. I did that math wrong. No, I did that math right. I was in 1,000 to 1,500-ish on average. There we go. Yeah, 950 to 1,550. It ends up 1,250. Again, the stacks are really nice. They're a bleed you can use with the helm, so you don't need to use your expensive armor spikes. You've got the whip. That bleed damage, again, 1,250 every three game ticks. Over the course of a minute, 33 hits of 1250, which is, almost 40,000 damage.
Yep.
that's like a 10 to 20% damage buff depending on your damage previously. That's what that is. That's humongous. add that on top of being a tier 92 weapon, and you this thing is disgusting. It's so powerful. And in addition, you're guaranteeing two extra adrenaline every basic ability because you've always got parasite stacks on your target that you can't not, except for maybe the first attack on something if you didn't kill something else near it. So Scourge good.
Yeah, this honestly really excites me about the melee combat style. I've always felt that way about magic, but I just went with ranged because that's just a nice, even middle-of-the-road approach, but melee starts to look interesting in some of these cases, but the problem that always comes up in my mind is I can't think of where I would use this.
So, I mean, it's for people that like melee, and the other thing I want to mention before we move on is that, we have to compare this to other melee weapons, right? We have to compare it to other things, right? We've already said the Masterwork Spear and the Zook Sword got kind of buffed by the helm because they do fun things by giving you more or extending your bleeds. The outlier in our high tier melee setups are the poor Kopeshes. Sorry guys, you're still out of luck. And the Leng Swords, the cold cuts, right? The Leng Swords, this whip is where the Leng Swords come in. And again, this is one of those things, like, I'm telling you to use an incredibly expensive thing just for Slayer. Sorry in advance. Like, the Leng Swords, because the Leng offhand allows you to use Hurricane or Destroy dual wielding, even without the main hand, right? You don't need the main hand to get that passive. That's just on the offhand. The tier 85 or 95 versions both have that. What this means is that you can use Hurricane. So if you've got multiple targets around you, you use Hurricane. Every one of those targets now has a Parasite stack on it.
You interested yet, Tannis?
I already taken damage.
Oh, yeah, I'm interested, but I'm a melee guy.
This is melee. This melee. I mean, that's the, like, this is the main hand cold cut is being outdone right now. Sorry, Sword of Leng, but the offhand dagger blade of Leng, the stabby one, is for at least AoEing for Slayer, really good with this. I mean, you put, again, we're going to talk about things that are worth a lot of money. I'm sorry in advance. You put a Dragon Halberd sweep effect that hits twice everything in front of you. You get two stacks on everything in front of you when you use that. Same thing with the Flurry ability. Stacks on everything around you. And Hurricane stack on everything around you again. You can massively stack up things around you, and then you kill the target in front of you with all of these stacks on it. And again, if you're AoEing a group of stuff, you can create massive things, and again, 40,000 damage a minute. You're gonna, like, that is enough to one shot so many Slayer monsters that, like, this thing is gonna be so good for AoEing large stacks of monsters that have any amount of, like, any vaguely chalky amount of hit points that you can kind of stack up.
So let's talk Slayers, and, you know, we're talking obviously more chonky than regular Abyssal Demons. What comes to your mind of where you feel this would
Abyssal Demons for this?
Where you'd feel would be a good spot for these?
I actually think Abyssal Demons are a perfect spot for this because they stack up around you. You can get more than one of them on each square. So those Hurricanes and Flurries apply those big stacks to everybody. And then when they all die, again, two square radius, so everything that's within a square of you, all those Abyssal Demons attacking you, then get these extra stacks. You could probably, I think it is reasonable to say that you could maintain 30 plus stacks on Abyssal Demons just by killing the ones around you, because the ones you're attacking won't get such high stacks.
Now, let's say you're coming into this from the Slayer use case, and sure, we're still talking about a very expensive Slayer weapon here. Let's just keep that in our mind, everyone, for this. What would be the benefit? How would you convince somebody to abandon their Scythe or Lanakeas for this?
I wouldn't.
Okay. And that's where I landed as well at the end of it on the Slayer side.
Though, like, no, and actually I kind of take that back, because this is, like, the way that melee has been set up kind of from the beginning is that two-handed has better AoEing ability, right? If you want to use a two-hander, like, if you want to, like, kill a whole bunch of targets at once, you want to use a two-hander. This thing will rival that for anything that you can clump around you. And also, dual wield has always had better single target damage.
Yeah.
Because of destroy. Because of, you know, the way that set up is just, it has better single target damage abilities. And worse and fewer options for AoEs. And so your Lanakeas, your, like, big two-handed, two-range weapons are for enemies that are going to be, you know, multiple enemies at once. It's going to be for, like, you could use any of these, I think, for killing stuff in, like, the Sophanim Slayer dungeon, for killing Abyssal Demons, like, everything in that kind of mid-range Slayer, everything that would be in, like, a Slayer cave. Necreals, like, all of these things are potential options for these.
I mean, but Slayer in general, anything you're going to melee, it seems like, yeah, it would be, you know, it would be fine if you just wanted to switch over. I'm really curious. I think this would be good at the new Savages.
Potentially.
Yeah.
I agree with that. I mean, it's kind of hard because they're, well, I think they are 2x2, aren't they? Or are they 1x1? That, like, you can't, it's harder to get multiple of them around you. But I suppose they could teleport in the same way Abyssal Demons do, that you could stack them if you wanted to AoE. And again, as long as you're killing something or applying one or using an AoE around you, one of those abilities, or killing something every 9 seconds, those stacks will perpetuate. They will stay. They will go from target to target and increase. I mean, if I kill two targets with 30 stacks on them, is 30 stacks on anything else that's just walked up on me, right? Like, it just, you could probably stack close to, you know, if you've got many things around you, you'll end up with very, very high stack numbers. 30 stacks is 750 damage in addition to whatever damage you do with your abilities every global cooldown. Like, I can't emphasize enough how much damage this thing can potentially do. And again, also for single target, right? If I'm just killing mammoths and they're spread out like you, like no business, there's no reason for me to have a scythe. Scythe isn't going to do anything for me. Having an extra range, I'm still attacking the single target in front of me. This is better single target damage. So it's got an AoE use case, which is really cool because of the way that the bleed spreads. But it also is your best in slot single target weapon. You know, because the cold cut will have 3 or 4% additional base damage on it, and this will have, as long as you can get a few stacks onto your target before it dies, probably worth it. And again, those stacks can apply poison, so it's an extra 6,000 poison damage a minute, which also does matter. So I don't know. This thing's really good.
The discussion on this makes me want one of them, but I don't use melee in enough places to justify the 300 mil.
If I did it, it would be my daily driver. So
right,
it's totally worth it.
And I don't do Slayer, so that's where you and I differ on that.
Mm-hmm. See, Shane, that just means you don't have enough money. Just go kill Telos. What do you mean? Get good.
Or just finish the max cap rep and raids time there's loot and get those codices in.
5 or 6 max cap codexes down the road for you, and you're set. That's it.
Speaking of, where would we use this Scourge on the bossing front?
I mean, Karapak is a great example. Beastmaster is another great example.
Yeah, I was thinking
of
that one.
If you're a bold human, remember that Beastmasters at melee attacks do hit in a 3-square melee range around him. They are 9x9. So, like, it can be a dangerous thing to melee Beastmaster. I don't advise people who are not very experienced to do that. Yakamaru's potentially, because you spend about a minute on each pool. Again, if you have anything like a jellyfish, if you have add additional damage dealer monsters that spawn from the thing, you need to be a little careful in terms of, like, can I kill this within 9 seconds, or will it drop the stacks off of the main creature I'm attacking?
Yeah.
Because you need to manage those stacks. It's like, situationally, I mean, again, reminder, it's a tier 92. It's good everywhere because it's just a tier 92. It's better than a Krieg. Like, it's a good melee weapon on its own. The bleed
didn't
make it extra good at Karapak and Beastmaster. And
I didn't get this from David before he... things. Left for the day, so I didn't get to ask him if this would push him into melee anywhere at any point. But I would
he
guess
mentioned that he mentioned that he might use it at Karapak.
Yeah, obviously.
It makes melee. The thing is that it makes melee damage viable, right?
Yeah,
it's the, like, if you want to
and
use
we're talking
melee
about
and you can get one of
with
these
the, with the helmet as well. Just so everyone's clear on that. That's assumed.
Yeah, for the last month or so, or last couple months, like. Mage got brought back into the meta by Karapak and the drops that he made, and then Crypt Bloom made Mage even more use cases. Melee's use cases have gone down. And for the people that love melee, like, you could still use it, but if you brought it to, like, your high-end bossing teams, the elitists in the group would look at you with side eyes and be like, all right, I know it worked once, might as well keep using it. Nobody's going to actively flame you for it, but everybody's like, you're making a choice. I respect you for playing the way you want to play, but also, some people don't respect you, and that's not great. This makes those people say, oh, Helm? Good, bro. Go get him. Right? Like, this is the thing that brings it up into kind of a very similar level to where the other combat styles are. And again, we can argue about which one's the most powerful, but the bottom line is that they've all had so much power creep since we've had something that truly pushed the limits of what we were able to kill, that, like, all good, you can use whatever you want now. There's nothing looking at you that's like, oh, that's what you're doing?
That's you and you're reasonable. That's you and you're reasonable, though, who says that.
No, people will now, like, the people with the fractured staves will still laugh and giggle because the fractured stave is broken.
Well, they pay the root cost for that.
Well, people use air spells. You see a lot of little cyclones flying out of people these days. I don't judge. But, yeah, the, This makes melee very competitive damage-wise. That's what I'm going to say, especially places where the whip can be allowed to stack. For like burst phases like Solak's Core, I mean, it's still a tier 92 melee weapon. You still Zerg and Zerg and it's dead. You know, it doesn't... you know, it is what it is. It's good enough to be used anywhere. The melee style now is like, it's good. It's fine. I don't think anybody can look at you and be like, it's a choice you've made.
And we got the extra benefit that the Masterwork is still player craftable, so there's that too at tier 92. Yeah. So, overall, I feel really good about this. I want one, but I don't think I'll spend the money on it, just because it's not my current wheelhouse and whatnot, and I just don't think I'd use it enough. So, I'm overall happy with the changes that came in with this. I think the star of the show is the helmet.
Yes, agreed.
It's
so much adrenaline. Oh my god, I'm just drowning in it. It feels so good.
And when
to actually stretch my attacker's insignia for once. I just don't feel bad about it.
And when it comes to using, killing traditional Slayer monsters, the update this week does that as well. So overall, I think it's a win on all fronts with this.
Looks good, feels good, rewards are good.
I wonder if... Done. I think the only lingering question is, will this be enough to situate the people who said that Melee needed more?
I think so.
You
Man,
think so?
It's so much adrenaline. So much adrenaline.
Yeah, we'll have to come back in a few weeks and see if it's made its way into anyone's
made a thing that scales off bleed. So. And then they made two things specifically to give us another bleed.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Tanis, any other further thoughts before we move on to the act track?
No, I think we covered it pretty well.
Okie dokie then. Before we do that, of course, I'd like to thank our patrons for this episode. You guys allow us to do so much. We just recorded part two of the ABCs of Dailyscape, going through what some of the good dailies look like, and on principle, what a good daily is, and talked about what other games do, and what RuneScape could do better. So if that sounds interesting to you, you can check that out on the Patreon feed at patreon.com/rsbnb. You can access all those for as little as $1 a month, as the following people have done this week, including Amos Reed, Andrew C., Arvids L., Big Huge Rat, Bryflex, Christian S., Chunk the Monk, Cook Me Plonks, Diana, Duramax, Elo Matey, Flaws of Man, Free Milk, Guy LaFleur, Jacob R., Jade Gizmo, Jason S., Jeebus, Jesse W., Jim M., Ling01, Malinoric, Nate the Great, Patty the Architect, Parnassius, Renhawk, Ricky A., Rippeth, Samuel FL, Skiotan, Scott DS, Seth W., Stabeev, Tanner JW, Taylor B., The Naked Captain, The Lion, Tim A., Tom V., Zant, and Zazakon. And if you're wondering what all this is about, you can check it out at patreon.com/rsbnb there for as little as $1 a month. Patrons gain access to the entire back catalog now of 44 monthly bits, one a month, a special in-depth episode on something RuneScape related. This one was recorded this week with Sirion Thaxi and myself going into, as I mentioned, part two of our Dailyscape discussion. Lots of fun stuff happened with that one and all the other monthly bits going back. So if that sounds interesting to you, that's one option. We also do have a VIP tier for $3 a month. We get a special VIP rank on the Discord server, and I mentioned on the podcast at the start of the month, plus access to high quality stereo versions of the show. And for $5 a month, if you want to go to the maximum tier, you'll receive a shout out each and every week on the podcast and gain exclusive access to the outtakes we use to make the clip show at the end of the year. And of course, we will have a fun little surprise coming in the mail to everybody who provides shipping information. Aim to have that out probably sometime March, April-ish as we work through that. So once again, thank you to everybody for your support on that. And at this point, we're looking forward to the Hot Ones challenge, should we ever get to the 500 a month mark, which Tanis and myself will apparently be suffering very, very badly. Spicy stuff.
And Thaxi too.
Oh, Lordy.
Oh, you're signed up for that?
I have just been signed up for it. I think I'm apparently the only person on our production team that cannot handle spicy food. So,
right there with you.
Perfect. We'll suffer together.
Anyways, all that and more at patreon.com/rsbnb. Thanks so much, everyone.
Thanks.
All right. So, as if it wasn't enough, this week we also got Yak Track, Path of the Creators 2.
I've completed so many skill and kill tasks by killing abyssal demons.
Did we get a Yak Track, Shane? Did we really get a Yak Track, or did we get free periodic shit?
Yeah, well, only if you paid.
I'm ripping the Band-Aid off, man.
Okay, let's do this. Because first, this one's 8 weeks instead of six, and every task secondary option is now skill and kill.
I'm going to be honest. I wish I had done the math based on the numbers we have so far to look at how much playtime you would have to do, how much skilling, how many hours of skilling you'd have to do to complete the whole thing. Because I by the end, we'll be able to just do that math.
Yeah, we don't have that currently for anything like, beyond 30.
Yeah, my brain is doing, quick math on this, and it's like, it's looking like maybe it's going to end up being 100 to 120 hours to complete the track. So over 8 weeks, that's, how many hours a week is that playing? 15?
Yeah.
Easy. Please. So, done.
I mean, it's not easy for everybody, but for many people that play RuneScape, I think 15 hours is, let's say, entirely doable.
This is where you need to protect players from themselves. Do I love the fact that I'm getting all these rewards and I don't have to do nothing? I don't have to change anything? Yeah, okay, that's great. Should I have that? No. No, because that's not a Yak Track, right? The whole idea is to get you moving around, get you doing different things. This was wrong. I don't agree with this choice.
I have two minds about this. Firstly, that's a fair argument, but that's your traditional battle pass system, right? You sign up for this battle pass, you say, I'm going to play your game a lot and I want to have pay so that I get some extra rewards while I do it. I'm not going to pay, we're going to get more bang for my buck because I'm going to play your game. I'm going to increase your play rates and do those things, and that's how the battle pass, or all those battle pass or whatever your favorite game's equivalent system is, right? And from that aspect, this is the play our game option, but at the same time, I'm on board with you that and I'll double down that some of the tasks are bad. Some of the tasks, if you are either incredibly expensive, mm-hmm. or the skilling task will actually take longer than the skill and kill task.
Oh yeah. Like the runecrafting ones.
When I was low level dungeoneering and I was training dungeoneering in my alt, I consider myself a very good group dungeoneer. I'm very fast. My average large time in groups is about it's about 6 minutes. I could not finish a dungeoneering Yak Track on a medium level account before the skill and kill portion of the task came up during the last Yak Track. And there's similar things where some tasks are just bad, right? The reason people liked the skill and kill was I'm not going to burn 2,000 Elder Logs.
Yeah.
I'm just not going to spend however many million coins it is on doing that. It is more efficient for me to buy a bond because it's cheaper than buying those logs. And some of those tasks are just either you didn't design this well for high level players, or you didn't design this well with the XP rates of low level players for average play in mind. Yeah, maybe if I'm paying for floors or something, right? And I'm getting really fast floor
times.
I
have to say, the Yak Track is more painful on a lower level account.
It is. And, even if it is more, you have more options, right? The highest tier of fire making logs I could do was maple. So, those fire making tasks near the end were cheap, and that was fine. But when it becomes so limiting because you've only got a couple options at the end, it becomes either very expensive or the time-consuming nature. The tasks aren't all designed like with the gameplay in mind. You know, with love to the team that designs these, you know, you don't have as many players playtesting it. That's what the only thing that I can guess from this. You don't have somebody who's playtested through it at a variety of account levels. Which, you know, fair enough. That's like 3 weeks of like 40-hour work weeks for people to have somebody test this. I mean, I don't know if there's a better way to speed that up, whatever it is, but I understand. But, like, have somebody at least look through these and be like, hold on a second. Or, like, see, like, nobody at level 60 Dungeoneering completed this Dungeoneering task. Not a single person. I'm sure they could access those numbers.
Oh, yeah, they could.
It seems like they aren't. Because they've said, ooh, double digits. It's a 10th Yak Track. Yeah,
here's
guys,
one.
Your
here's
9th
one.
Yak Track still had tasks that were here's absolutely
one. Task 22, kill 1175 monsters or play for 2 hours.
Right.
Well, and we've always had that in Yak Track, right? But there's a difference between having bad tasks that you should have an option to, and then just right. never having to do anything any different than what you would normally do.
Which, like, some people want the rewards without having to. Like, I get it. My issue is that this now leaves us with a singular task.
Yeah.
And I dislike having a singular task because giving me two tasks usually means there's something I can do when you make me shitty tasks.
Right. Which, like, with love. Another example, task 28, choose 716k Herblore XP or play again for 2 hours, 15 minutes.
Okay, but 716k Herblore XP is like 20 minutes of making overloads or extreme potions, right?
Right.
Like that's fine. Still. It's just like it's expensive. But if you like, that gives you an option. You can choose to get your because it is XP, right? It's just like you can train this skill however you want, or you can do the task. So some of them, the time isn't working, and the expense is not worth the XP you gain because the task isn't like again Elder Logs. Please don't burn Elder Logs.
I'd be interested to see the engagement metrics on this after it's done, because everybody has called for this since the very beginning.
Like, but wouldn't I think more people will reach task 50?
They will, yeah.
But aren't we letting? Okay, but I feel like this. Yes, they're bad tasks, but I almost feel like that lets them off the hook.
It does. I mean, that's my issue. I want more tasks. I enjoy the tasks.
They should be thinking and creating better task for that people want to engage in, instead of just giving the option of don't change your day job, just do what you do and get the rewards anyway. Feels lazy to me.
And are these systems supposed to, I wonder, feel like they're penalizing you? Because it definitely does feel like you're being penalized sometimes for choosing the skill and kill.
I mean, so that's the thing, right? That's what it says in the news post. The news post, and I don't have it pulled up to quote exactly. You can probably do that while I'm talking through this, Shane. Yeah. But it effectively said, here's these skill and kill options. If you don't like doing your tasks, they'll take a little longer, but you'll get there this same way. It sounds like they want their, like, if you go and do the tasks, you get the rewards quicker. So you can do it if you play less. That's supposed to be your option. If you, you know, want the XP boost sooner, that's your option, is you go and you do the tasks. And in many cases, that's true, but it's not true in all cases. And that is the problem, is that, like, sometimes you just don't have an option to do the task, even if you want to. And maybe that just means that you like, finish off what that task would have been. But that just makes it more of a, like, those, you know, those what should I do bots on Discord. It's like, okay, you gave me a suggestion. I'm not going to listen to it because I don't want to actually go fishing.
That's true.
It's like, this is the what should I do bot for RuneScape, except it just changes once every hour, you know? Rather than actually, like Tane is saying, rather than actually enforcing you to go and do the task. I don't know.
The time isn't even a penalty if you're doing what you're gonna do anyway.
You're doing it longer. They only play 4 hours a week, and if you want to do it
play 4 hours a week, Yak Track isn't for you. You need to buy some bonds.
You still get all the rewards. Yeah. I mean, but like, you still get to enjoy the battle pass, the like advancing through tasks aspect of it. The other issue with skill and kill is that if you don't, it gives the option to gain progress on a skill until task is 3 minutes. It doesn't automatically tick between things. And so it's not like they build up like 2 points every 6 minutes and then it like rolls. And so, like, if you're doing something where you only get an XP tick once every minute and a half or 2 minutes or more, right? If you're doing some bosses like Guild Wars 2 or something where you're, I mean, that's not a great time because you get a tick every minute, but, you know, you don't actually get an XP tick every 3 minutes exactly. So they take much longer to do for some content than others. Like, bossing is much slower typically.
Yeah.
Versus, like, any of the actual skilling things, you get XP drops every 2, 3, 4, 5 ticks. So you're guaranteed to only have a couple ticks between when it's available.
You know, I'm gonna agree that the choice was always a good thing between the two tasks. And sometimes, yeah, the skill and kill is nice, but there's also just sometimes nice to have two tasks to choose from. And,
yeah,
you know, the number one thing I always heard people say with the Actrax is give us a skill and kill option throughout, and I think we even put out a nibble for that on the second or third Yak Track asking for that, and lo and behold, here we are. We're talking about why it's not a good thing. And
well,
I think at the end
from
of
ourselves.
And I think at the end of the day, there's arguments on both sides.
Yeah. Here's,
and it's gonna come down to the engagement.
Propose a solution, because we've been talking about this and it's made my brain wheels go. And that's that, like, the issue here is that we want skill and kill to skip annoying tasks. But we also want to be forced to, like, do our variety of content. And what I was thinking prior coming into this, right, coming into tonight, was that, like, I would have liked to have had a skill and kill and two task options for everything.
Yeah.
And yeah. I'm going to walk back on that, actually. Because kind of like Dan is saying, that doesn't require you to do anything different. I think if they do that, make the skill and kills twice as long. You know, make it really, like, you have to do a stretch. Like, it's an option if you just hate your tasks. Like, yeah, but, like, seriously, like, made the skill and kill shorter this Yak Track than they did last Yak Track. Just double it all, right?
That's true. They
make
are shorter
spend,
this Yak Track.
Make me spend 4 hours instead of getting 700 Herblue XP. I'll still do it. I'll still play for the 4 hours. It's an extra 2 hours to complete my track. But, you know, it's the, like, I think that the skill and kills are too short, and that also fixes my problem of not being able to get your XP in time if you make your skill and kills longer. The alternative is use skill and kills like skip tokens. Give people 10 skill and kill skips, quote-unquote, every time. And just, like, each skill and kill then requires, you know, earn, let's say, 30 or 20 skill and kill points, like, right? An hour and a half. Some number in there. And just, like, I want to apply this so that you'll get a, it'll just stick a third. I have no idea how this would be on the design end. Maybe it's obnoxious. I feel like it wouldn't be. To just, like, stick a third bar on there that says, yeah, you've got your two. You use this token. Now you have a third bar. You've got a skill and kill bar in addition to your two tasks. And you have, like, 10 of them.
And then keep the normal skips around as well.
And, like, don't send these track to track. Don't make them purchasable.
True.
And it's just, during your trek, if you don't want to buy skips, here's your 10. And, like, to be fair, and I've said this before, I am a fan of Jagex making money. It keeps my game running. That makes me get more content out of my game. I want Jagex to get money. And from the business side of things, that probably, and I think this, the same thing happens with this, though. Like, you make skill and kill an option for everything. Nobody's going to buy task skips. Nobody's going to, like, given the price of bonds is already too high.
And that's what I said. It's going to come down to engagement, both in terms of how many people complete it and how many people go out there and purchase those extra bonds and use skips on this. And then that's going to inform if this was needed or we'll see it again, I think. And I think that's the story at the end of the day where we end this, because we've outlined the positives and negatives on this, and it really depends on how you see Yak Track. So, cosmetics on this one? Anyone a fan?
I mean, they're very consistent, right? It's they've been doing a somewhat cartoonish, big, chunky art style for quite a while now. It doesn't look bad. It's kind of RuneScape-y. I get it. I don't like it, and I use almost none of them.
Yep. The only one that I can see myself
play well with the Mac display, but
using from this one is the. Is the Bic bow and maybe some of the Bic swords.
Mm. The Bic bow is an interesting one to me. It's a big chonky slab of metal, which apparently is a bow. I don't know how that one works, but fantasy, sure. I actually really like the shields. The shields on these are ginormous. The Bic shield in particular is just Like, it's a slight step down from Heru's shield, the, like, big, gigantic circular plate guy, but it's humongous. It's a tremendously large shield, and it looks pretty good. The full shield also is a round shield that looks pretty good, too. It's got some flame kind of spice coming off of it. Looks kind of dope.
Yeah, I like the green.
The full armor is okay.
Colors.
The Bic, the thing that I might do is actually the Bic tier, the task one rewards, the Bic accolades, yep. I think, outfit. Looks a lot like the Cabbage Mancer. I think you could do some fun fashionscaping, mix and matching that with the Cabbage Mancer stuff for your springtime outfits.
Yeah, I thought of combining that with a farming cape.
Yeah, it could be good. The helm on it's really funky, but whatever.
Yeah, we have other options for that.
It's just personal. That's totally personal opinion, yeah. By the way. I mean, you're welcome to like it.
It doesn't resonate as much as the Windtimber Aurora one did with me. I will say that.
I mean, the Windtimber Aurora was just a really cool, like, they added a cool, that cool star pattern in the pets. They had their cool, like, rainbow wrapping around stuff. Rainbow always goes over. Rainbows make stuff 10% cooler. It's a fact. it's just, it's, you can't get around it. I also like the, what is it? The Bic Sentinel, the Sentinel of Bic Pet. I believe it's task 30, 35, something like that. The doggo, the Bic doggo is really cool.
Yep.
And the full dragon looks, from what I can see, like it's got a really cool metal sheen on it. Like they gave it the fiery kind of, I don't know if it's actually animated, but it looks like it's got a really nice reflection on it. And lost me how that'll look in the Mac client, but the Drake of full looks pretty cool to me. So
yeah, it doesn't resonate as much like as the all other ones did, but it, I feel like Yak Track cosmetics are always so subjective, and everybody's going to like one or like a different one. I do want to comment
there's
always
on a one or two for everybody
on the XP boost for this one. They did that differently again this time as well. You got a 10% on task one and an additional 10% on task 25.
Yeah.
And that's how they split that apart.
So they've moved, they front loaded everything again, and that's what we asked for, I think, 2 Yak Tracks ago.
Yeah,
was the Yak Track where they had 15% XP boost on task 50, and we're like, but I want to use that for the Yak Track XP. I'm getting XP from Yak Track. I want the bonus XP for that. And they moved it earlier and decreased it. I think it was like 4 or 5% every 10th task for the last Yak Track. And this one, they front loaded it more. It's kept it around 20%, which I think is down 5% from where it's been.
Yep.
Which, again, good. It's maybe it was a little bit much to have us have plus 25% XP for 6 weeks. Now we have plus 20 for 8 weeks, so maybe it's not better.
How do you feel about that, Tannis? Too much XP?
Never.
Okay.
5.6 bill, ladies and gentlemen. Yeah.
I'm gonna do it on the main as I always do. I don't know if I'm gonna go through this one like I went through the other one on the alt. I don't know. Like, I feel like
Got skill and kill, so you just play your role.
Just play it the way I want to.
See what you get. Yeah. See what task you end up at.
Yeah.
So you get what you want. Also, I think decrease the number of lamps and stars.
They did.
Because a lot of the tasks, this one, you only get one or two from. And I'm actually a fan of that because the tracks in the past have had like way too many hundreds of thousands of XP worth of lamps and stars. And now it's like one or two per. It's like a little sprinkling.
And I think with that, this can be called the listening to players Yak Track. Because they wanted it, of course, skill and kill on everyone. They wanted the XP rates front loaded, and they wanted less stars all along. This is what I get for always trying to keep myself unbiased with this. Is I don't know what the general community thought is about this Yak Track and the skill and kills on that. Have either of you guys heard anything on that? How the community feels at large?
Oh, they probably love it.
Yeah, I think people are generally fans. Again, I think there are issues with it, but for the general player base, this means they get their things without having to do extra work, and I think most people are going to be down for that. Yeah.
All right. Sounds good.
I'm chalking this under blame the electorate.
You're right. There we go. You're right. If you don't like the way this went, talk to the other players out there. Not that blaming players is a good thing to do.
The RuneScape player base will always complain. I am sure that our complaints are being voiced by others, and Jekyx will see the complaints, and if they complain loud enough, maybe it'll change. Who knows?
Yeah.
Only if you're a really vocal minority.
On Reddit.
What? What? I made a Reddit post there today, actually.
Oh, spicy.
I shared our most recent micro lesson.
Oh, yeah. By the way, we did a thing talking about introducing different weapon perks and how you should design putting weapon perks on your armor and weapons.
If you want to watch that, you can find it at youtube.com/RSBNB. Think of this as the quick way to get into the invention perks about what perks you should run on your weapons and armor.
That's 6 minutes or so?
Yeah, 6 minutes. I think this was our most in-depth one yet in terms of production value. And I know I definitely felt that. I know you did as well.
It looked good. You did a good job, Shane.
Yeah. And the next one we're going to be talking about, what was the name, the human name that you wanted to give it?
the combat inventory.
Okay. Not the other name we wanted to go with internally. That the combat inventory is micro lesson number 3. And that will be launching next week at the same place, youtube.com/RSBNB. So definitely do go check that out if you're interested in seeing how to put perks and whatnot together. And we do offer both budget and expensive options. And I think the thing that we need to talk about with all of the micro lessons is that it's about, at the end of the day, learning something and figuring out how you want to play, because there's so many people out there who are in the Aftershock camp. I'm not in that camp. You're not in that camp. But we know lots of people who are. We talk about it being an option, but it's entirely not needed if you don't want it.
Less in the specifics. The goal here is that, like, the game is in a place right now where you can really kind of play the way that you want. And as long as you're kind of keeping up, you don't have to necessarily follow the meta. If you've got a couple of things that you like better, you know, play the way that you want and it'll work. Obviously, be a little careful with bringing true, you know, let's call them big brain strats into group combat, because you don't want to drag down your group.
How about that summoning pier?
I do like my honey badger summoning familiars. I think they're a great meme. But yeah, right? But, like, you know, you don't want to be dragging down your group, but you should. We're trying to display these guys in a way that says, you know, here's the potential options that will keep you, that will allow you to keep up the damage as well as you can, but still give you choice to kind of play how you want to play. And empowering you to kind of understand how to create these things and have the flexibility in your build is good. So that's the goal.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm happy to be doing these, because this is the background I came from on Star Trek Online. And I'm glad we found a format for this in RuneScape Combat. And I think the truly magnificent thing will be is when we pull a rabbit out of our hat and do it for skilling somehow. So there will be skilling micro lessons, folks. Don't worry about that.
They're coming.
youtube.com/RSBNB. Tanis, what did you think of our first one on action bars? Because I don't know if you watched this one yet.
Yeah, no, I thought it was pretty good. What I liked is a lot of guides out there just say, here's a bar, use this bar for this. Where this kind of went more on the lines of make you understand what the hell you're doing, and then let you do it without telling you exactly, you know, put this in this order in this way, and you know, I appreciated the style.
Here is your options in order to be able to kind of keep up. Here's the things that you really should have, because they'll be really helpful to you, and here's the things that you can kind of choose what you want to use. I think the skilling ones will probably be more along the lines of, hey, have you thought about this thing? It's not a very commonly used item, but it really helps with this activity. But we'll see how that goes.
Yeah, it's going to be a good, fun series. And my reason for doing this is that I personally hate watching YouTube videos that are longer than 5 minutes. And I want to create a format where we're focusing on that short time period. Because I've told everybody before who talks to me, if you send me a YouTube video longer than 5 minutes, there is a 95% chance I won't watch it. So that's what I'm going for on this. But youtube.com/RSBNB. We do have a listener question this week from Jade Gizmo, who says, I've been a part of 5 clans and I remember them all very well. What about you? Nobody would be interested in the story behind their clans, but I'm interested in the stories behind all of yours.
Mm.
Tanis, you have any clan stories or clan backgrounds?
Gosh.
You're at what you call the retirement home.
Yeah, and it's crazy because, gosh, I guess I've been there over a decade at this point. We had, you know, as many of you out there probably have experienced clan drama. There was a split, and the clan I'm in was one of the, you know, was a splinter from a bigger clan, and we improved a lot of things from the last, and I've also been in some other clans with my alt, which has been fun. You know, of course, Clan Quest ranks right up there. I was in a crazy Aussie clan for a little while with them. And that was nuts. Surely I've told you the Valhalla story, right, Shane?
I don't know that you have.
Oh gosh, this was very well within the first like 4 years. I was probably on. I was on track for a key and lost my cool one day and told somebody what they really were in clan chat. and all my friends knew it was coming because all they saw in the chat was me say, Valhalla, it's a good day to die. And then we'd let her go. And legend says, this is back in the days of TeamSpeak, where, you know, the clan owner was like, hey, does anybody know what's going on? Stannis, like, he's lost his mind.
Professionalism damned.
Yeah, and left for a little while and came back. And, yeah.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
All right. I feel like now I'm being invited to advertise Clan Quest. Before that, of course, we ran the RuneScape Bits and Bytes clan, but this was only created when Clan Citadels came out to review the Clan Citadel content for RSBNB update. And as a result of that, we most of the time only had about a dozen people in there. It was just something people joined for the hell of it. It never had any real organization to it. So there came a point in 2015 where I said, anybody who was involved in that, hey, I'm going over to Clan Quest. If anybody wants to join, follow along with me. It's where Earth is. And that's been part of our history ever since. Clan Quest is a wonderful organization, and I like to think of it as the gaming community, the gaming clan, where anybody who wants to can achieve a position of leadership and a position of power and bring their own vision towards the RuneScape 3 Guild or any of the other disciplines that we have in place at the time. It's, of course, known for its RuneFest meetups and meetups outside RuneFest at various places. We have a wonderful website that has been designed by some very wonderful people, not naming any names. It's got a very nice map on it showing all the different countries we have clan members from. Overall, there's weekly events. And, you know, I always say it comes down to the people. And when somebody says, why do you still play RuneScape? It's because, of course, the community around it, both within RSBNB update, but also around Clan Quest as well. And I always say, if you enjoy quests, even in passing, Clan Quest is probably a good place for you to be. You don't need to be a diehard lorehound or somebody who is going to be able to recite all the various Majorat names and what they've been up to in the last decade. As long as you
don't know the acronym for every quest, you just won't understand what's going on.
Yeah. No, it's not the case at all.
No, not at all. Not at all. And, you know, when it's not
Shane.
When it's not Quest Week, it's a skilling clan. It's a PVM clan. It fits into every other category.
We're just people that like playing the game. We don't have we have a very unelitist attitude, actually.
Yeah, that's actually really true. And it's something we try.
The new attitude.
We try and push through on
recruitment everywhere. Yeah.
We try and even push through from the leadership. And yes, the new attitude is something you'll learn about very, very quickly within the clan. As well, it's a really fun environment. That's how I found. I don't know if you have anything you want to add, Thakti.
I mean, moving on from shilling like mad, talking about my past clans. I mean, yeah, so I mean, my recent history, I've been in Clan Quest. I joined Clan Quest in early 2011, so it's we're going on 11 years now. It's been a hot minute. Love the place. Strongly advise. Before Clan Quest, obviously, I joined before the clan system, so when it was still a friends chat, and very pretty quickly transitioned into the actual clan system. Before then, I was part of a. When I first started playing RuneScape, kind of like everybody, right? It was like I have a friend of a friend who everybody gathered in their friends chat, and we just rotate between people. We just had a group that we played with when I first started playing. And a lot of those people kind of were a few years older than me at the time, grew up and moved on with their lives. Oops. I joined a group called The Fallen, which was a clan that had had a bunch of drama, and leadership had splintered off, most of them, and created this new group. I don't even remember what the original clan was called, but it was The Fallen. It was there for a couple of years. Took a break to do a heck of a ton of Clan Wars, because I loved Clan Wars. It's actually, I said it before, that's where my name comes from, Taxi, because I taxied people from the portal in the back to the middle wall. I was the person people followed. My name was T-H-A-X to start with the first four letters, so Taxi was the joke. So I did a whole bunch of Clan Wars for a while, ended up, kind of went back to the clan, they'd kind of fallen apart. So I joined for a while. I was part of the World 46 All-Terrain Agility Team. I had it as a goal to get my untrimmed agility cape, which I did do. Yeah, I know, but they were such a fun group because they had, basically at all times, they had a whole bunch of people running courses. That was during the time when, right before the Barbarian and Gnome Advanced courses came out. So the Monk Abatol course was the best way to train agility. So they had a whole bunch of things about papples with their, which is pineapples, and like bananas, and they would drop stuff on the course. They had a whole shtick. They had a mouse, a singular mouse that had gotten like, the people got their 99s on. So everybody, like, because you get 3 XP when you pick up a clockwork mouse. And so that had, like, you know, hundreds of people that had been through this place. That's why World 46 is the agility world still, is the World 46 All-Terrain Agility Team, World 46 ATAT. It was a good time. I went from there to what I decided to do instead was to get my untrimmed HP first. I did end up doing that one. I got my untrimmed HP at when I had my second highest skill at 93 defense. And I did that through Soul Wars. And so I ran calls on the Soul Wars world for a year or two after, not for a year or two, but a year or two after Soul Wars had come out. I spent a number of months, and this was right before I joined Clan Quest. I actually guested in Clan Chat. I applied on, I think it was page 7 of our second recruitment thread. And then I didn't have any sponsors because I didn't understand how the system worked for applications back at the time.
Sponsors are gone in this day and age. For anybody wondering.
Completely gone, so much easier to apply. But we wanted people to come and hang out first before they got a rank. That was just the way that worked at that time. And I didn't, you know, I wanted to go off and do this thing, and it was the same clan. You couldn't be in a clan in a friend chat, so I did my Soul Wars, and I got my HP cape, and I came back and joined Clan Quest, and that's where I've been since. Still have my untrimmed HP. Managed to get it keepsake because it took so long to get my second 99.
It's a much more interesting origin story than mine. For Clan Quest. So that's good.
Good question.
Yeah. And yeah, good question. I always love a chance when I get to advertise or talk about a certain thing. So,
oh, we know.
And, you know, I should also underscore that I wouldn't still be there if it was one of those guilds that had drama appearing all the time. And
we've had a couple instances, but it's been relatively contained. The leadership takes care of itself and moves along. The membership normally doesn't see it.
And that's the way we like it.
Amen to that.
All right. Moving on to other things. Picks of the week. Tanis, what do you got for us?
I've got something that I'm not gonna spoil it. I'm just gonna say my pick of the week is Picard, season 2. I just binged season 1 over the last couple nights just because I watched it when it came out, but I'm like, you know what, I want to refresh before the new season comes out, and I like this era. I think we're right back in the golden age, like we were in the late 90s.
Oh, I thought you meant like the late 24th century Star Trek stuff.
Well, that is really cool, and I can see like I have some ideas of what they're doing and what's being filled in lore wise. But you know, if you like Jean-Luc, follow the story. It's not over, and there are some familiar faces from last season and even familiar faces from the next gen, and
the trial never ends.
The trial never ends. Exactly. That's the perfect. I can't put it any better than what
those who have seen next gen will understand what that means.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, and I know some people long for the days of the one-off stories and stuff, and I think we are going to get that with Pike.
Yeah.
Right. But you gotta remember too that when that kind of stuff was popular, it was the time when sitcoms ruled, and now we're very used to a season, an overarching story per season, and it looks like that's what we will get here. And I'm excited about it. I really enjoyed the first episode.
I have to get to it, yeah. Because with this one, we also got note that 4 ships from Star Trek Online are being added to canon with this, and this Trek Online team provided a good number of the models used in this season, the CG models for ships. So that's going to be something to see.
Yeah, which, I mean, that's just super cool. I mean, that's just super cool anyway, because everyone knows how I've been feeling about that game. Just cruising, rising up through the ranks.
Yeah. All right, Thaxi, your pick of the week?
My pick of the week, it's a few months old at this point, but I want to throw a shout out and salam to actually an old school content creators named Verf created a movie. It's an hour and 40 minutes long, but it's one of those, if you're anybody that watches old school content creators, a lot of the, like, this is a Fremenic locked, so Fremenic only Ultimate Iron Man, so no bank Iron Man. In the Fremenic region, and he does like all of the old school Fremenic content in this account, and it's really well done. It's really well put together. It's a single video. He didn't stretch it out into a whole, you know, a multi-part series or anything. It's just he did a whole account. He did the whole account build, and he made a movie about it. And there's a bunch of like other content creators that you'll see sprinted through there if you're familiar with that scene. But it's just well designed. It's well designed. It's an engaging kind of thing to watch. It's good background if you're looking for something to AFK to. It's got some story elements in it where it talks about what the characters from the quests are doing afterwards, like old those movies, like now he's off saving the world, like those kind of things. No, he moved back home with his mother. And now lives in her basement.
Miscellanea used to look like that.
Yeah. So it's the whole like he makes a whole. Kind of a movie about the Fremenic story of quests and including how they end in old school. And I think it's just really well done. The editing on it is well done. The music is well done. And obviously it is your standard kind of, here's an Ultimate Iron Man. Here's the funny grind that I'm going to force myself to do.
I hope somebody remembers this when Golden Gnomes comes around this next year.
Yeah. It's just well done. So, I don't know if it was on the Golden Gnomes list for this year or not. No, because
this was published on December 11th, and they were
there we go. Yeah,
just getting it going at that time.
Yeah, so. It deserves some love. It's got 300,000 views right now, so clearly it's been seen. 100 minutes long, but yeah, there we go. That's my pick of the week.
Alrighty, my pick of the week is another YouTube video. For anybody who is familiar with the game Wordle out there, I'm not much of a fan of the game myself. But I'm always a fan of interesting solutions to problems, and Wordle is an interesting problem because it's got a limited namespace of the potential words that you can have in that the word length is only 5 characters max. So what that means is with 5 characters max and 26 letters in the English alphabet, that means that this is a prime candidate to write a algorithm for it to find the most optimal solution to solve Wordle. So there's a half hour long video plus another 12 minute video on top of it, an addendum that goes through the algorithms and the, in effect, information theory design of how you would go about solving this problem. And it's interesting if you are a fan of the Wordle game, but it's also interesting if you want to see how somebody might go about solving something like this, because there's not a lot of cases where you look at a game out there and somebody designs a solver for it, where they take you through the exact steps to how something like that would be built or how some sort of solution for that would be derived. And what this video does is it starts from very basic first principles, talking about what entropy is, talking about what additional bits of information are, and then how you can use that to build the solution to discover the ultimate, or not the ultimate, but some of the best opening Wordle words, and ultimately use that to build a Wordle solver. And this is something that computer scientists do every day when they're looking at novel problems that they want to solve using their computers, is they go through this exact same process. And it's a lot easier to do when you're dealing with confined universe sizes, in that you only have 5 character words and 26 letters in the English alphabet. It makes it so that it's something that's has a only set number of possible solutions, and you can whittle that down even further by knowing that Wordle isn't going to have the words that are, you know, truly absurd. And with that, you can use that to bake some assumptions into the solution process to come up with something at the end that solves it pretty optimally. So it's a fun watch if you have any kind of interest in that. And this is on that same kind of band as the Hidden Figures discussion that we had last week. So if there's anybody interested in Wordle, or anybody who's just interested in problem solving, give both these a watch. So as I promised, there'd be more picks of the week like that. And I think I just put both of them to sleep.
No, I was very curious about that. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. You get shaded, of course.
Oh, I should have saved this for a Sirion week, shouldn't I have?
I'm sure he'd have more to say about it.
He probably.
This has also come across my YouTube recommended, so I'm looking forward to watching it sometime.
Okay, it has. Interesting.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
This is the kind of like, yeah. Yeah.
Neat. All right, achievements of the week. The end
All
of
right,
double XP.
Well, let's get started with At a Dark Moor with 99 Prayer. That was on the 2nd. Sparty Pants with 120 Slayer on the 2nd. Turd Sniffer Zero with 99 Agility on the 2nd. Waffens with 99 Hunter also on the 2nd. And A-Real with 99 Construction on the 1st. Then we have Crazy Legs 722 with 99 Invention on the 1st. Aeroth with 99 Woodcutting and 99 Fishing. Azandia with 99 Magic. Dark Wizard with 99 Construction. Duke Juker with 120 Fire Making. And these are now on the 28th, and finishing up, we have Zill with 120 Prayer on the 28th.
Nicely done.
Starting on the 27th, we have Legion 1943 with 120 Archaeology, Lord Earth with 99 Cooking, nerd. We had Nyard with 99 Smithing and Crafting. We had Shane 12088. 20 Dungeoneering, nerd.
Ooh.
Then had Sorensen 57 with 120 Smithing and 120 Crafting. Well done. As well as Super J with 99 Archaeology, The Outdoors with 120 Invention, and Zilcam with 120 Herblore. Moving on to the 26th of February, we had 47474 or V474R. With 99 Rune Crafting, Azadia with 99 Crafting, Dark Wizard with 99 Summoning, Irindil 20 with 120 Slayer, Lore Deluxe with 99 Fire Making, Necro Devil 8 with 99 Slayer, Cooking, and Agility, Pony Picker with 120 Construction, Silver Wiz 9 with 120 Invention, Thieves with 200 million summoning experience, Taddeo 22 with 99 magic, and Waffens with 99 thieving and agility.
All right, picking it up on the 25th, we have Arav with 99. Thieving, Atmahua with 99. Fletching, Eulogs with 120 archaeology, Iron Ass with 99 agility, Jakir with 120 cooking, Jamandy 52 is back and got 200 mil fletching. Rippeth got 99 fletching and 99 summoning. Tanny Kiant got 120 archaeology rather. Turd Sniffer Zero got 99 crafting. Tim 2 got 120 summoning. Todio 22 got 99 ranged. Xanthan Gum got 99 rune crafting. Then on to the 24th, we go with Arov with 99 cooking, mining, and rune crafting. Then we have Delta Polo with 99 strength, ranged, and defense. Duke Juker with 120 farming. Thieves with 200 million construction XP. And Up the Iron 05 with 120 dungeoneering and 120 slayer. And we take a nap now until the next double XP live event. Good job, everyone.
Congratulations.
So speaking of that, how did we all end double XP, Tannis?
I ended it as I began, with a pick and a hammer in my hand.
Oh, okay.
But for the rest of the week, I've been, not Monday, but Tuesday started working with the new Slayer creatures and really enjoyed it. I kind of wish I was at 120 so I could do it again. And, and now we're back to mining for a little while.
All right. Sounds good. Sounds good. Did you sell any of the plates or did you use them on double XP?
The plates.
The rune plates, right. Or did you do any smithing?
I didn't use any. I've decided to really just keep saving.
Nice. How about you, Thaxi?
I have rediscovered. Well, no, I haven't rediscovered. I started a couple weeks ago playing a Elder Scrolls Online account that I had a year ago that I played for about a month, and I've gotten back into that and I've been grinding there and enjoying it. So my DXP, I had two accounts, and between the two of them, I think I used less than 10 hours. One of which didn't need XP, and the other one really needed XP. over the weekend, what I did do when I play is actually I got all of the raids feats done for my alt account. So my alt now has the Daredevil title, which feels amazing. And then after I finished my feats on Sunday, I just did a mad dash to use a bunch of DXP to get 90 thieving off of dummies and two or three magic levels off of dummies. And what else did I do? I grabbed a handful of random skills. I used a bunch of... Oh, I got 90 construction. So basically, I'm trying to get all the ports adventures unlocked, right? Because I'll need that for Master Questscape one day. And I want to get that going sooner rather than later so I can dawdle my way through it and not feel like I'm obligated to log in every day for it. So I did a couple of those. And I really regret not getting 90 smithing because armor spikes have suddenly become a much more interesting prospect as I now am the proud owner of two Jaws of the Abyss helms. And you, of course, need 90 smithing to create armor spikes as they're not tradable. I will need to be doing some amount of boosting to get that done. I believe I'm at 84, 85. So I should be on, world 70. I should be able to do it with the pulse core boosts that are going off there.
Yeah.
But it's not the great... It's not fully AFKable, which... But, so I should have done a little bit of that. And obviously I had supplies for 99 construction and I had experience for 99 dungeoneering and Slayer. And you know what? That'll still be there in 3 months.
It will.
That's fine. I've got a bunch of herbaler supplies, but I'm stocked up on overload, so I'm not too worried.
All right. As for me, as you heard there, I got 120 dungeoneering. I finished that, did a ceremonial dungeon floor, and then just did tokens with the rest. And then I think at this point, dungeoneering will be reserved for any lore pages that I'm missing and, just doing it on double XP with friends that need it at that point in time. I think that's going to be the bulk of dungeoneering that I'll be doing going forward. So that
we'll
was
be encouraging you to work on Master Quest Cape when you finish comp. It's coming. It's coming, Shane.
Oh god.
You finish one goal, you have another.
But on the Altai-unlocked invention, so that's 80 crafting, divination, and smithing, and I also, the other big one was that I got high enough to boost to get my two dinosaur farms going, because that was the thing that was slowing down my farming on the Alt. So, did that.
Can't have that.
No. No, we can't. And then the rest of the time I just spent doing some protein hunter, and I unlocked big game hunter there because I figured why not. So that's what
protein
I did.
Hunter, he's going for those amino acids, lads. He's hunting.
That's right. Oh, I don't think we have anything else left to say on this episode. Of course, we'll be back next week for another episode of RSBNB Update. Thanks everybody for being here, and we look forward to what the next piece of content for RS is going to be. But if you want our RSBNB update delivered directly to you, you can subscribe to us on any podcast listener out there at update.rsbnb.com/subscribe. We're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon, Google, Pocket Cast, Stitcher, and of course YouTube at youtube.com/RSBNB, where you can find the video version of these shows and the new micro lessons, which we hope to be coming out on a weekly cycle going forward. So with that being said, we'll see you guys next week for another episode of RSBNB Update.
See ya.
Bye.
Ciao.